Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We're devoting most of our program this morning to the Trump travel ban and the reactions to it, and we continue to invite your stories, your questions, and your opinions from any point of view. Listeners, what's at stake for you? Anyone personally affected? With family members in limbo, or maybe you yourself, call us at 212-433-WNYC. And anyone else, too, is this consistent or inconsistent with American values as you understand them? Is it necessary for public safety? What else would you like to say or to ask? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Our next guest is Emily Bazelon, who writes about the Supreme Court and legal affairs generally for the New York Times Magazine and is the author of Sticks and Stones, Defeating the Culture of Bullying. Hi, Emily. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian.
So your Times colleague, David Leonhardt, wrote a column that says, "Let's not mince words. President Trump's recent actions are an attempt to move the United States away from being the religiously free country that the founders created and toward becoming an aggressively Christian country hostile to other religions." He says theocracy. And then he writes, "I expect that Trump's attempts to undermine the First Amendment will ultimately fail, but they're not guaranteed to fail. He is the president and he has tremendous power." So wrote David Leonhardt in the Times. And so for you as a legal analyst, do you see First Amendment religious freedom issues in a legal sense that will maybe have to be adjudicated by the Supreme Court?
Yes, I do think there's going to be a big First Amendment question that will come to the courts soon. And that is because this executive order gives priority to Christians seeking refugee status and prioritizes them over, in particular, Muslims. And so that's a distinction based on religion. And normally the First Amendment would not allow the government to give priority in that kind of way. And the question is going to be in the context of immigration, where the president's power really is at its zenith, whether that anti-discrimination principle will hold.
There's been so much confusion on just the facts of the travel ban, and I want to come back to the religious test later and play you a clip of what Rudy Giuliani said kind of shockingly on Judge Gene Pirro's TV program over the weekend about how he kind of was asked by Trump to create a legal fig leaf so that they could do a Muslim ban legally. We'll play that and get your reaction. But on a moment-to-moment practical sense for people affected, there's been so much confusion on just the facts of the travel ban and the status of people caught up in it. Let's see what we can clarify. The back and forth on green card holders who travel to one of the seven countries and want to come back, is that now clear?
Well, it seems – I mean, I don't want to say that anything is clear because it's been so chaotic. But the new secretary of the Department of Homeland Security did say on Sunday night that this order would not apply to green card holders going forward. So if that is indeed the rule that the administration abides by, then that will change the status of green card holders who now try to get into the United States. Though all the people who were caught in the air and on the airports, their status is still up in the air.
Here is White House Chief of Staff Reince Priebus on Meet the Press yesterday defending tough screening of green card holders, even though they won't be subject to a blanket ban.
This is in regard to the executive order. The executive order doesn't affect green card holders moving forward. I've said that. But what I'm suggesting to you is that Customs and Border Patrol, I would suspect, if they have a person that's traveling back and forth to Libya or Somalia or Yemen, I would suspect within their discretion, they might ask a few more questions at JFK or some other airport when someone's coming back and forth within their discretionary authority as a Customs and Border Patrol agent. And what I'm saying is I would suspect that most Americans would agree that that might be a good thing to do.
So, Emily, Reince Priebus is arguing common sense. If somebody even with a green card is going back and forth to Yemen a lot or Syria or any of the countries on the list, Then the host, Chuck Todd, in that interview later raised the question of whether that would be constitutional to screen green card holders who travel to countries different from other permanent legal residents. Do you see a legal issue there?
Well, that's a good question. You know, there are a couple of competing federal laws at issue here. So there's a law from the 50s that says that that gives the president extraordinary powers. He can suspend the entry of all aliens or any class of aliens as immigrants or non-immigrants based on determining that their entry would be detrimental to the interests of the United States. So that seems really sweeping, and it certainly would cover, you know, a few more questions at the border. But then we have another law with which Lyndon Johnson signed in 1965 that prohibits discrimination in the issuance of an immigrant visa because of race or sex or nationality or place of birth or place of residence. And so that would seem to imply that if you are discriminating against non-people simply based on the country they're coming from, that that is a problem and that the president and his deputies may not do that. I think, however, that, you know, it's pretty clear that this order went far beyond asking a few more questions. And if that were all that at issue, we would not be having the enormous controversy and chaos that we've had over this order so far.
Right. And this asking a few more questions only pertains to green card holders. Obviously, they're wanting to ban any travel to this country from almost anybody in those seven countries on the list. But a U.S. green card holder, legal permanent resident who's already gone through all this vetting to become a legal permanent resident, they're saying they're still going to do some more to people who go to those countries. And, you know, when they come back to the airport, even if the intent is to probably let them back in. And so I guess there's going to be a legal challenge to that. Let me play the Giuliani clip from Saturday where he says what he was asked to do by Donald Trump after Trump originally made that announcement during the campaign that he would ban all Muslims from entering the United States.
When he first announced it, he said Muslim ban. He called me up. He said, put a commission together. Show me the right way to do it legally. I put a commission together with Judge Mukasey, with Congressman McCall, Pete King, whole group of other very expert lawyers on this. And what we did was we focused on, instead of religion, danger, the areas of the world that create danger for us, which is a factual basis, not a religious basis, perfectly legal, perfectly sensible, and that's what the ban is based on.
Rudy Giuliani on Fox News Channel over the weekend. And Emily, I don't know if that's admissible in court when somebody challenges this on First Amendment grounds as a religious test, but he's basically saying Trump came to me and asked, how do I do this religious test with legal cover?
Right. And the fact that Trump talked about a Muslim ban during the campaign is also going to come into any court challenge. I mean, look, the Trump administration's defense is there are many majority Muslim countries that are not on this list. However, these seven countries happen to be majority Muslim. They happen to be places from which, you know, no one has come who has committed an terrorist act on American soil, in contrast to other countries that are not on the list, including Saudi Arabia. And, you know, it has to be said that that Donald Trump and his organization have business interests in countries that are not on the list. And unfortunately, because he has not divested from his business, that is relevant to the discussion. And the conflict of interest here is an issue that's going to just continue to pop up and dog this presidency.
Though, do you really think he excluded countries on the list from the list because he has business interests there?
I don't know the answer to that because we don't know enough about his finances because he hasn't released his tax returns. Another distinction of these seven countries from some of the others is that they have relatively little power and they're poor, with the exception of Iran, which, you know, perhaps the Trump administration is, you know, interested in antagonizing. I'm not sure. But it does not seem like a coincidence that he has kind of chosen a number of countries that don't have an easy way to hit back at him, either politically or in terms of his business interests.
Rose in Hamilton, New Jersey. You're on WNYC. Rose, thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I wanted to tell my story about the situation that I and my family got into with this new the new situation.
Thank you for being willing to share your story with us. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm on the non-immigrant visa here. My sister is software engineering, and it's been 2 years that she's going through all sorts of the exams and interviews to get admission to come here and continue and finish her research here in the U.S. And now she has offers from several universities. She's planning this trip to come here, and now she resigned from her job and everything, and now everything is on air. I mean, I hear so many people are saying that. Go back to your country, and they don't know us. My family, but I'm coming from a family that during the revolution time, they were against of the Islamic government. They executed two of my uncles. They fired my mom. My mom never had allowed to work again. And I'm sorry.
It's okay, Rose. I hear you. I understand. You're telling a story about your family.
And yeah, it's just so hard. When we
who opposed the Islamic Revolution. You're saying people in your family were executed by the Islamic government.
Yes, that's true. And now when we are out of the country, so many people here, I'm from Iran, it's just looking at us like we are tourists without knowing us and without knowing anything about our history. And I hope American people understand that their decisions affect many people's lives that they can't even imagine.
Rose, thank you so much. I know this
thank
was hard
so
for you.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
Thank you very much. You. Emily Bazelon, legal analyst from the New York Times Magazine, with us as we talk about the legal aspects of that. And poor Rose and her family. And her story brings up a legal question, which is, is it grounds to challenge the travel ban in court that it casts such a wide net as to say anybody from Iran, anybody from the other six countries on the list, rather than doing what the United States, I think, you know, values as an American value, which is to treat individuals as individuals?
Yes, I think all of those legal questions are going to come up in these suits. And I think also, as Rose very movingly gave us a little bit of a sense of, this is also a question about our fundamental values and morals as a country. I come from a family of immigrants. I'm sure many of our listeners do. And the people who are now, you know, coming from places like Iran, like Rose's family, who've worked very hard and gone through all of these steps, these are the people who traditionally have made America strong. And, you know, there's a way in which, and I think that Rose was describing a situation in which there was a set of rules and people in her family relied on them and planned around them and built their lives around them. And now those rules have been changed in a very sudden, abrupt, and quite cruel way.
Kevin in the Catskills. What town in the Catskills, Kevin? You're on the air. Hi.
Hi. Well, yeah, I'm up in the Catskill Mountain region. I'm just worried about the way Schumer and the Democrats are doing things, because they want to break the Constitution. For those of us that have been legally in America, born and raised in America, and they can change the Constitution on that, I think they do.
What do you mean change the Constitution?
Well, you see, they're changing rules on the Constitution, such as the SAFE Act in New York State.
Oh, that's the Cuomo Gun Control Act.
Yes, Cuomo and Schumer and all of them are in on it. And they just want, and I'm an independent, I'm not a Republican, I'm an independent. And I just think that they're doing the right thing by doing what they have to do. Now, the Democrats are just crying about it. Yeah, Schumer is crying, but he's changing the Constitution on Americans that have been born and raised here. But yeah, he's crying about the Constitution for foreigners. Ridiculous.
Kevin, thank you very much. So Kevin doesn't like what they want to do with gun control. Emily, I want to ask you about the different judges in different cities who issued different orders over the weekend. Judge Ann Donnelly in New York stopped deportations temporarily so people aren't irreparably harmed before the courts can hear the larger challenges to the ban. Judge Allison Burroughs in Boston, it's being reported, may have barred even the detention of travelers for the moment. Have you looked at the differences between these rulings and maybe others?
Yes, there were four rulings, the two that you referred to and another one by Judge Brinkema in Virginia for people in at Dulles Airport, and then a fourth one that I think only applied to two people trying to gain entry in Seattle. And you're right. I mean, the Boston order was narrower because it wasn't national like the Brooklyn order from Judge Donnelly, but it went further in the sense that it said at least temporarily that people can't be detained as they came in. And so lawyers were actually advising people entering the country to reroute through Logan so they wouldn't be detained. There has been, I think, the most confusion about the Virginia order. There were was a lot of concern on Sunday that the Customs and Border Control CPB, Customs and Border Protection or Border Patrol, wasn't giving access to lawyers to the people who were being held. And there was a kind of face-off going on. It was confusing. I'm not quite sure how limited that access was and what the justification from the CPB government officials was, but there's been some concern that at least in Dulles, people still have not been necessarily or on Sunday weren't being allowed to talk to lawyers who were trying very much to speak with them.
So if they actually defy a court order, then we have a constitutional crisis. If the order is coming from the administration, maybe an impeachment crisis. Have you been monitoring for that aspect? Is it clear if the Border Patrol folks at Dulles Airport are defying the court order, whether they're doing that at the direction of the Trump administration?
I think lots of people are alert to that possibility. I don't think we have clear evidence of that. And I haven't seen, for example, that the immigration lawyers went back to the court and asked for a contempt finding from the court, which is the first step. If the government was defying the order, then you would expect those lawyers to go back to the judge and say, hey, back me up here. We need to get in. And I did not hear about that happening on Sunday. So we're going to have to see how this plays out over the next few days. The administration is obviously trying to minimize the impact of this in terms of the number of people affected. And we'll also have to see going forward what the policy is going to be. And of course, as you mentioned earlier, this immediate crisis of people stuck in airports, being detained, having their plans completely thrown up in the air, that's only one small part of this order, because then there are all the people to whom it applies who hadn't left yet and are having their lives thrown into great upheaval, but they're back in their home countries.
By the way, Emily, Judge Ann Donnelly in New York, Judge Allison Burroughs in Boston, the judge in L.A. is Dolly G. All these women judges. I don't know if it means anything, but it's just interesting that there are a number playing prominent roles.
Absolutely. It means there are women on the bench. And some of those women had been on the bench for a while, and some of them were appointed by Barack Obama.
Now, here's another high-ranking woman, Kellyanne Conway, on Fox News Sunday. And listen to how she characterizes Judge Donnelly here in New York.
The judge in Brooklyn, the Obama appointee judge in Brooklyn's stay of order really doesn't affect the executive order at all, because the executive order is meant to be prospective. It's preventing, not detaining. And so you're talking about 325,000 people from overseas came into this country just yesterday through our airports. It's 325,000. You're talking about 300 and some who have been detained or are prevented from gaining access to an aircraft in their home countries and must stay for now. That's 1%. And I think in terms of the upside being greater protection of our borders, of our people, it's a small price to pay.
So the Brooklyn judge, the Obama appointee, using Brooklyn and Obama the way they might use it in a campaign. But how do you see this in legal terms on the substance of what Kellyanne Conway was saying there, that it doesn't affect the executive order because it's really prospective? Do you understand that?
Well, I don't think it's correct. I mean, Judge Donnelly's order applied to the people who were barred entry based on Trump's executive order. To say that it was just perspective is spin. Maybe it'll be perspective going forward. But there were all these people caught in a net who Judge Donnelly, who her order directly applies to. And we have all these legal questions that are going to play out. I mean, this is just the very beginning of a lot of litigation over this order. And the other thing I just want to note is these claims about national security are being refuted by many former government officials from the Bush administration, as well as the Obama administration, from, you know, Senators Graham and McCain. And there's this just real concern that, in fact, when you send the message that the United States is barring the door to Muslims, that you're putting out a message that the United States does not like Islam as a religion. And every president has been so careful to avoid that kind of rhetoric and messaging, including George W. Bush in the wake of 9/11. So that's another rupture here that is important to the story.
I know you've got to go in a minute, but as a religious test, David French in National Review argues that the federal refugee law specifies religious persecution as one of the criteria to look for in determining someone's refugee status. So giving preference to religious minorities, and that might include, you know, Shiites in a Sunni country or the opposite, so it's not just even Christians, would be consistent with past practice and American values, not a change. Any reaction to that?
Well, it's true that we think about religious persecution when we're granting refugee status or considering asylum claims. And religious minorities can, in fact, be more at risk for religious persecution. I think what has been problematic about this order was that it was couched in terms of helping Christians. Trump tweeted about that. He was wrong in saying that Christians were barred previously. That's not true. Thousands of them came in during the Obama administration with refugee status. Thousands from Syria. But when you focus on, when you single out one religion, that's when you move from protecting religious minorities from persecution in general to showing a kind of favoritism. And even though the order itself does not use the word Christians, if that's how the administration is clearly couching it, that's when there's a potential constitutional issue.
Emily Bazelon, staff writer for the New York Times Magazine, senior research fellow at Yale Law School, and author of, what's that name of your book about bullying again?
Sticks and Stones. Thanks, Brian.
Thanks, Emily.